Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov. I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the week. Here are today's top stories.
Trump, drugs, and war with Venezuela. Trump's war on wind power and climate change accelerates, and opposition to Netanyahu's war plan looks insufficient. First, Trump, drugs, and war with Venezuela. The sinking of a boat allegedly carrying drugs from Venezuela has turned out to have ominous political and military implications. President Trump has taken the entirely illegal and irrational step of authorizing the U.S. military to use shoot-to-kill orders against suspected drug smugglers. As we have seen in Los Angeles and Washington, D.C., Trump is expanding the traditional role of the military and common-sense notions of national security by converting soldiers into policemen, smugglers into enemy combatants, and drug trafficking into state terrorism. Trump's order gives soldiers license to kill drug dealers on sight, just as they did in the attack on the Venezuelan boat. A former Homeland Security official in the Obama administration, Jay Johnson, said, quote, "Here the president appears to be invoking his amorphous constitutional authority to kill low-level drug couriers on the high seas, with no due process, arrest, or trial." He added, "Viewed in isolation, labeling drug cartels terrorists and invoking the national interests to use the U.S. military to summarily kill low-level drug couriers is pretty extreme," unquote. Trump may also be using the boat incident to take aim at Venezuela's leadership. As usual, Trump and company have offered no details on the incident, where the attack occurred, how they knew the boat carried drugs and was headed to a U.S. port, and why, contrary to earlier U.S. intelligence findings, it believes the Venezuelan government controls the alleged drug trafficker gang that was killed. This cover-up coincides, perhaps not coincidentally, with a U.S. military buildup in the Caribbean that might be the prelude to an attack on Venezuela. The White House press secretary has prepared the way, saying, quote, "The Maduro regime is not the legitimate government of Venezuela. It is a narco-terror cartel." Those words typically come from an imperial presidency, which Trump seems to embrace with his justification for renaming the Defense Department the Department of War. He says the U.S. hasn't won a war since World War II, that it has held back from winning because the country, quote, "decided to go woke." Now, presumably, we're going to start winning wars, and the Caribbean may look to Trump like an easy win. A U.S. buildup there has invasion written all over it. 8 warships, several surveillance planes, and 1 attack submarine. If the U.S. attacks, you can expect that Trump will justify it as a counterterrorism operation, when in fact it will be designed to bring about regime change, the removal of President Nicolas Maduro, who has been in Trump's crosshairs since Trump's first term. All it may take to touch off a U.S. attack, in defense of national interests, of course, is an incident such as the buzzing of a Navy-guided missile destroyer by 2 Venezuelan jets last week. Remember the Bay of Pigs, Tonkin Bay, and 9/11? We've seen this play before. Nor can we omit another Trump motive, using an attack on Venezuela as a warning to Mexico, which is grappling with a response should Trump carry out past threats to intervene with U.S. forces in pursuit of the drug cartels. Trump's war on wind power and climate change accelerates. Not content to end subsidies to and federal funding of wind power, authorized under Joe Biden, the Trump administration has enlisted various agencies not normally involved with energy issues to derail offshore wind power entirely. The New York Times reports that Health and Human Services, for example, has been ordered to study, quote, "whether wind turbines are emitting electromagnetic fields that could harm human health." And the Defense Department is, quote, "probing whether the projects could pose risks to national security." Then there's the Energy Department's latest finding that, quote, "wind and solar energy infrastructure is essentially worthless when it is dark outside and the wind is not blowing." Evidently, no one thought about storage batteries. You can bet what these departments will conclude from their studies, considering that Trump has already ordered a stop to construction of a $4 billion wind farm off the coast of Rhode Island because of dubious national security concerns. All this because Donald Trump decided in one of his most ridiculous recent pronouncements that wind power harms birds and landscapes. This report comes as over 85 American and international scientists condemned a Trump administration report from the Climate Working Group of the Department of Energy that calls the threat of climate change overblown, saying the analysis is riddled with errors, misrepresentations, and cherry-picked data to fit the president's political agenda. No one should doubt, say the scientists, that human-caused climate change is real, is already producing potentially dangerous impacts, and that humanity is on track for a geologically enormous amount of warming. No one knows what socioeconomic impacts of this warming will be. It should also be clear that the Department of Energy's report's approach to undermining scientific evidence mirrors tactics previously employed by the tobacco industry to create artificial doubt. Unquote. What the Department of Energy should have done, the scientists say, is read the vetted, authoritative climate reports of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and the National Climate Assessment. But the DOE won't, because they believe facts are the enemy of truth. And here's a late entry into bad environmental news from the Trump administration. It intends to turn off the two climate monitoring satellites that have been providing data for decades, arguing incorrectly that they cost too much to maintain. Actually, former NASA officials say the satellites are operating perfectly and cost little to maintain. Another nail in the coffin of environmental protection. This is one program, however, that a bipartisan vote in Congress may just keep alive. Opposition to Netanyahu's war plans may be insufficient. The New York Times reported on September 2nd that in opposition to Prime Minister Netanyahu, quote, several leading figures in the military, the Mossad spy agency, and the government are calling instead for a return to the phased approach to resolving the conflict, beginning with a temporary truce. Mr. Netanyahu and other senior ministers now favor a more elusive deal that aims to free all the remaining hostages at once and end the war on terms set by Israel, terms that Hamas has so far rejected. The phased approach would free about half the hostages initially in exchange for a number of Palestinian prisoners. Those opposing Netanyahu's stance include the military chief of staff, the head of Israel's Mossad spy agency, Mr. Netanyahu's national security advisor, and the foreign minister. It now, however, looks like Netanyahu is going ahead with an all-out siege of Gaza City, and he has Trump on his side. On September 7th, Trump said, quote, "The Israelis have accepted my terms. It is time for Hamas to accept as well." His terms are Netanyahu's. Give up the hostages, cease fire, and end the war. Trump's final warning, his quote, was nearly identical to that of Israel's defense minister, who said, quote, "Release the hostages and put down your weapons, or Gaza will be ruined and you will be destroyed." A prisoner exchange, by the way, may be more complicated than we might think. A report in The Guardian cites an Israeli military database which indicates that only about a quarter of the roughly 6,000 Palestinians in detention are actually fighters. Quote, "Those jailed for long periods without charge or trial include medical workers, teachers, civil servants, media workers, writers, sick and disabled people, and children." In other news, Putin clarifies his war aims, disregarding Trump. If there was any doubt about Vladimir Putin's intentions in the war with Ukraine, he boiled them down to this, quote, "It seems to me that if common sense prevails, it will be possible to agree on an acceptable solution to end this conflict. If not, then we will have to resolve all our tasks militarily." And he's going about the latter with a vengeance, striking Ukraine with unprecedented bombing in recent days, hitting not only civilian targets, but also, for the first time, a Ukrainian government building. In short, Putin is saying that Ukraine must either accept defeat and concede territory or prepare for ceaseless attacks. There's no room for Russia-Ukraine peace talks. More than that, Putin is pressuring NATO not to consider putting troops in Ukraine after a ceasefire. Sending drones over Polish territory, where they were just shot down, shows how far Putin is prepared to go to force Ukraine's capitulation with NATO's tacit consent. Putin knows exactly what he's doing, daring Trump to act on his professed disappointment with Putin and impose sanctions. And Trump remains in compliance, most recently ordering major cuts in support of European security programs that are directed at the Russian threat. Allied officials are reportedly confounded by the cuts, but they shouldn't be surprised.
They are just the latest administration appeasement of the Russians. A risky secret U.S. operation in North Korea goes awry. The Times reports on a Trump-approved secret mission by Navy SEALs into North Korea, smack in the middle of nuclear talks with Kim Jong-un in 2019. The mission was to plant an electronic device that would eavesdrop on Kim's communications. But the SEALs never got that far. A North Korean boat discovered them after they landed, and the SEALs killed all the Koreans, who turned out to be fishermen. Trump never disclosed the mission to Congress. Had he done so, someone might have reminded him of the hostage crisis during Jimmy Carter's administration, or the legal requirement of disclosure to Congress, or the high risk that discovery might not only scotch nuclear talks with North Korea, but set off a nuclear crisis. The Times investigation gives fascinating details about the extraordinary difficulty of the mission. Left unclear is the target. Where were the SEALs going to plant the electronic device? In retrospect, the mission seems like a desperate, overly risky attempt to gain intelligence when all previous efforts had failed. It could easily have led to a major strategic disaster. Since Trump rarely admits to failure, he has disavowed any knowledge of the mission. But if he did not have knowledge, how to explain why such a sensitive mission could have gone forward without the president's approval? Here are two updates from my previous reporting. First, India-U.S. relations have hit rock bottom, most recently shown when Prime Minister Narendra Modi embraced Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin in Beijing. Even Donald Trump had to acknowledge this abject failure of his diplomacy. "Looks like we've lost India and Russia to deepest, darkest China," Trump wrote on Truth Social. "May they have a long and prosperous future together." The attempt at sarcasm can't hide the fact that he is responsible for bringing those three together. To be sure, India's sudden closeness to China is most likely a matter of convenience, given their significant differences. But for Trump to say that the U.S. and India still have a special relationship shows how far out of touch he is. The second update concerns U.S.-South Korea relations. Tensions between the two countries were high enough, but the Trump administration added to them when ICE agents arrested around 300 Korean workers, along with nearly 200 others, in a raid on a Hyundai battery plant in Georgia. The administration claims the workers were there illegally and were keeping jobs from Americans. The Koreans all appear to have had visas that did not allow for technical work. Nevertheless, the administration now has to justify encouraging South Korean industrial giants like Hyundai, Samsung, and LG to invest in the U.S., yet imposing severe restrictions on visas for skilled workers. Both sides now are talking about reviewing the visa situation to allow Koreans to teach U.S. workers at the Hyundai plant. Finally, I couldn't resist this tidbit from China. When Vladimir Putin and Xi Jinping were together recently for a summit meeting in Tianjin, Putin was caught on a hot mic quipping to Xi that they might seek immortality by having organ transplants. Reuters published the clip, but China's official TV station forced Reuters to delete and destroy it. If we find out that either of those leaders is living well into their 90s, we now know why. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.